now, live from the Copple Chevrolet GMC Studios, Omaha Sports Insider, your sports source, powered by AM 590 ESPN Omaha and KMTV. Here's Joe Quinn and Nick Handley.
Again, Tagovailoa going to throw, throws, and it's picked! Picked at the 45-yard line, it's going to be returned for six! Boom! Tagovailoa gets picked, and it's returned by A.J. Terrell for six! Oh, what a play for the Clemson defense!
Here's Tua now, he's got Josh Jacobs behind him, play action fake. Tua loads up, looks long, tries to find Jerry Jeudy, he's got it, he'll break the tackle, he's going to go in, touchdown Alabama! 62 yards, right back at you. And Alabama is within a point as Tua to Jerry Jeudy allow the Crimson Tide fans to start breathing again here in Santa Clara.
From Lawrence, he'll hand it off and give it to ETN coming left side. ETN cuts it to the 15, he's at the 10, at the 5, stays on his feet, hit it to the end zone and in. ETN refused to go down. Scores from 17. Clemson retakes the lead.
Bama breaks the huddle. Quickly to the line of scrimmage. Tua behind Pierce Baker. He rolls left. He looks and throws wide open end zone. Hayo Hentges. Touchdown, Alabama. His third touchdown of the year. He had two against Texas A&M, and he has one here tonight in the national championship game. Touchdown, Alabama.
Tagovailoa wants to throw. Looks downfield, goes down the middle, throws, and he overthrows it. Picked off by Mullen at the 10. He'll return it right side, close to the 15, 20, 25, 30. At the 40, the 45, and steps out of bounds, close to midfield. Lawrence going to do a little shuttle pass inside the ETN, and he's in. Touchdown. ETN's second reception for a touchdown this season. His third touchdown in this game. And Clemson extends the lead.
Kick going left to right. The snap. The spot is a fake. Mac takes it, and he is not going to get there. It was a fake, and it was covered up by Niles Pinckney. And the fake field goal fools no one. And Clemson will take over on downs.
That's the shotgun snap. Gets back the pass. Going to throw. Had a complete. At the 40 and put it upfield and hit it for the end zone. And it'll be a touchdown. Justin Ross, as Alabama's corner went down, and it looked like he may have blew a knee or something, and Ross got open and takes it to the house for six. Lawrence, back to throw. Looks across the middle. Throws it back in the end zone. Puck. Higgins. Touchdown.
Wow, what a throw.
What a catch.
It was
also
the only place he could have thrown it.
Tagovailoa going to keep it. Rolls under pressure. They got him. It's Sutton. That's the 9-yard line. Cleveland Pearl. And Clemson another stop. Aloha, Alabama.
Aloha, Alabama.
You know, Clemson is a natural. Just like last year, Alabama was. Well, they could win the fight tonight.
They could win the fight tonight, Nick. If I never
and
have to hear those either one of those songs again, yeah. I will probably die a happy man.
Can we get into the biggest failure first? Imagine Dragons with Lil Wayne. That was bad.
It was terrible.
It was really bad.
It was really quite horrific for a variety of reasons, which we will spend some time on today. But look, Nick, I was watching this thing last night, and you and I talk about this game often because it will go down in a lot of people's minds as the greatest national championship game ever. And that is the 2005 Rose Bowl between Texas and USC. And what was on the line in that game? Everybody was talking about USC coming in as maybe the greatest college football team ever. You know, they had, I think it was the Leinart year. Reggie Bush was that season. Mm-hmm. They had everything that you needed to be considered amongst the greatest of all time, except for one thing. They didn't win the national championship game against Texas.
Against Vince Young.
And that is exactly what happened again last night. You're talking about Alabama coming in, and Nick, rightfully so. I don't think any of us, any of you, any of anybody were wrong talking about this Alabama team as maybe being one of the greatest teams ever assembled. I mean, the offense by the metrics was as good as they've ever had. Historical, really, outside of what Oklahoma did this year in the realm of college football, their defense was still, you know, nasty in that typical Saban style. It's like this team, if they go 15-0, could be considered amongst the greatest college football teams ever assembled. And yet, here we are again, where they get to the game, they can't win it. And granted, this game was nowhere near as epic as the 2005 Rose Bowl was, but maybe we had the wrong team pegged as one of the greatest of all time, because that last night, if you're an Alabama fan, you're still stinging from the ass kicking that they received last night. That they left very little doubt about who the best team was yesterday.
And college football fans are rejoicing. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Sure.
Unless you are an Alabama fan, and if you are, you know what? Life ain't so bad for you, okay?
Get over it.
But college football fans alike, I mean, I can't count how many people, myself included, wanted to see Trevor Lawrence, you know, with a 98-yard bomb when they had it at their own 2-yard line. Still up 44-16. Everybody wanted to see a 50-burger. Everybody wanted to see, like, I mean, it was a 28-point deficit, yet we wanted to see more. And I'm convinced on this. The reason we do, no matter who you root for, who you cover, one of the biggest hangups anytime Alabama's involved in a national championship is, boy, nobody else can beat this team. It's always Alabama. And it should, in all reality, be, you know, don't hate, appreciate. Appreciate what Nick Saban has been able to do and what Alabama has represented. But it's impossible for us to do that because you want to see more teams with an opportunity. And for a very long time, people have looked at Alabama and just said, man, I just don't, when it comes down to it, I don't know how you beat them. Now, Clemson showed they could do it before, but they had sort of a generational force with Deshaun Watson. And I don't feel everybody's fully embraced Clemson as that next Alabama team. Even Dabo Swinney said, no, they're still far from a dynasty. So I think people looked at Clemson beating Alabama in that moment, representing whoever you root for in college football. Hey, you know what? Maybe there is a chance for my team. And you know, there's so much more to that, and it's probably still not all that realistic because Alabama isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon. Clemson is only getting better. But, yeah, anytime Bama goes down in the run that they've had, to me, I think a lot of that excitement sort of represents, hey, maybe my team does have a chance. Maybe somebody can beat big, bad, mighty Alabama and maybe eventually Clemson. I'm convinced that's why everybody was backing Clemson last night.
No. And the people who are backing Clemson, Nick, certainly got treated to a real show. Look, I mean, Trevor Lawrence last night, he kind of mentioned this going in yesterday. I mean, that dude's on top of the world right now. He's a true freshman quarterback. He's got all of, you know, the tools that he needs to be successful in the future, including a bunch of other young guys around him. Watching just him yesterday and that Clemson offense, which talk a lot about the Clemson defense, specifically the Clemson defensive line, and not that they didn't play well because they did, but boy, the Clemson offense I think should have opened a lot of people's eyes last night. I mean, ETN was fantastic running the ball. Nick, they've got receiving talent all over the place. They've got guys who can block, and they've got a guy who in 2 years will all likelihood be the number one overall draft pick who has got 2 years left slinging the football around in Clemson, South Carolina. Got to be pretty happy with that.
They didn't need Dex Lawrence either. Again, you know, that was the one thing I was so impressed with the Clemson defensive line against Notre Dame is without one of your most forceful defensive linemen, Dexter Lawrence, they did not miss a beat against Notre Dame. Well, okay, it's Alabama. All right, it's a better offensive line, and they are. They're a better offensive line than what Notre Dame was. But the battle at the line of scrimmage to see Alabama get so overwhelmed was crazy. There were just so many moments in this game that I'm watching thinking, wow. I don't understand what I'm seeing. And the way this game started out, it was exactly like what Brad Edwards had talked to us before. He said, as you referenced that 2006 Rose Bowl game between USC and Texas. From an FPI optic, it was at least supposed to be similar to that. At least the way that these teams sort of stacked up, it very well could be that way. And you see the pick six, but then Tua Tagovailoa has the bounce back where he just, you know, throws the bomb, and all of a sudden, we got a tie ball game. And then they're kind of going back and forth. It's 14-13. You're thinking, all right, this is going to be that type of game. And then Clemson just said, nope, no, it ain't. We got this. You know, in all of the praise to Trevor Lawrence, and there should be, because the kid is special. I mean, how many times during the broadcast did Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit have to remind us that he's 19 years old? And it did. It got redundant to the point that it's like, okay, we get it. But there were moments, it's almost like you had to remind people. Or they had to convince themselves. They had to keep saying it and convince themselves that what this kid is showing should not be done by a 19-year-old person. It just shouldn't. A kid who was playing high school football last year should not be able to do this. But there was a moment on why I continue to like Tua Tagovailoa. Had a bad night. 21.5 QBR. Okay, just an awful night for Tua Tagovailoa. The pick six.
Well, it started off bad with the pick six. It got worse from there.
But I want to go back to that. This is why I have no reservations whatsoever that Tua Tagovailoa will be a fantastic quarterback at the next level. I remember seeing him go to the sideline after that pick six. It was just a huge tone setter for Clemson to really get things going. And Dabo Swinney talked about it. I mean, they needed to get going fast. That happens. I loved Tagovailoa's body language after that. I couldn't really make out what he said, but he was looking at either, you know, coaches as he came to the sideline or teammates and just kind of had that, no, I'm good. I'm good. And what did he do the very next drive? Threw a beautiful seam route. Accuracy. Stepped in, made a big play. Now, throughout the game, he got overwhelmed. He really did. But I like his moxie too. But Trevor Lawrence, for this kid, when you watch all of the things that make quarterbacks from great to special, now he's going to have a bullseye on him the next 2 years. The expectations are now through the roof. But just his demeanor, just a cool, calm customer. When they were making big play after big play, you know, he would smirk every now and then. You know, he'd crack a smile every now and then. But for the most part, he'd just kind of take it in stride. Just like, yeah. And this morning, I'm listening to Mel Kiper talk about if Trevor Lawrence was eligible to go into the NFL draft now, that he would be the number one quarterback taken, and made a comparison to a guy that I'm watching last night thinking he reminds me of Andrew Luck. And that's exactly who Mel Kiper compared him to, an Andrew Luck type player who has athleticism, can extend plays, can move with his feet, but has a rocket for an arm, has accuracy, but more than anything, he is always in command. And I think that's why you continue to hear the guys tell the entire audience that he's 19, because it was to watch what he was doing in the dismantling of Alabama and to see how out of rhythm, out of character, I mean, the undisciplined penalties, the frustration penalties, this was an Alabama team that was just getting taken behind the woodshed and they had no clue on what to do. It was remarkable.
I am interested to see what happens with Lawrence over the next couple of years, because he's got 2 years left of school unless he, you know, does something odd and decides not to play his junior year, but he's 2 years away from the NFL draft. Nick, next year he will enter the season as the unquestioned Heisman Trophy favorite. I mean, you want to throw Tua into that mix or maybe some other guys, that's fine. But Lawrence, in my opinion, will enter the season as the favorite. Clemson will be the national title favorite entering the year next year. And we're already talking about Trevor Lawrence being the number one overall pick when he does become draft eligible. I want to see how he handles that. You know, because the pressure this year is on him, certainly, but he's able to play with a little bit of that, you know, youthfulness, kind of that carefree style. You kind of wonder, how does a guy like that handle expectations being heaped upon him? So we'll see. But, in my lifetime, I was thinking about this last night, in my football lifetime, there have only really been two quarterbacks that have entered the draft conversation as, like, can't-miss guys. And that's Peyton Manning. Ended up, you know, obviously there was the whole Ryan Leaf-Peyton Manning thing, but Peyton Manning was one, Andrew Luck was the other one. In 2 years, are we talking about Trevor Lawrence as that kind of guy? Because he's already got a rocket for an arm. He's got great control of the offense. He's got tremendous size. He's like 6'5".
6'5", 215.
He's a full-grown man already. He's still got 2 years of college conditioning left. Would it shock you in 2 years if Trevor Lawrence enters the draft as kind of that next Andrew Luck slash Peyton Manning type?
I
feel like
it.
That is the kind of player we're watching right now, just based on what we saw last night.
Well, and look at, Andrew Luck was sort of ahead of his time when it came to the type of quarterback he was. Now, the good thing about him at the time he was drafted is that there was still, he still possessed that pocket presence, ability to stand in the pocket and deliver. But he was sort of that Aaron Rodgers cut where, oh, yeah, the guy, by the way, can run a little bit too. If, you know, everything is flushed down the field and there is some running room, he's going to be able to take it and go. And you know what? It's going to be encouraged by his coaches. So he was ahead of his time from that standpoint. Now that is where offenses are going in the NFL. Where they want, they don't need a guy that's, I hate the dual threat label, because I feel like when people look at a dual threat guy, they assume that, well, he can run, he can throw, but he's not a great thrower. Like, he's got arm strength, but he's not accurate. In this day and age, the dual threat guy is valued because a lot of the RPOs, a lot of the ability to just, if you can run a little, show a little bit of zone read from time to time, just to keep a defense honest, or when a play breaks down and you can roll the pocket out and be able to take off on your own if it all breaks down. That's what a lot of these offenses are predicated around. Trevor Lawrence didn't run a lot, but when he did, it was effective. the guy still has that similar ability like an Andrew Luck, where he's strong in the pocket, he has a rifle for an arm, and for the most part, he's pretty darn accurate. And you would assume if that trajectory continues, we always say this, we've been talking a lot about, you know, Adrian Martinez here locally for Nebraska. You know, if the trajectory continues, boy, what a special player that guy could be. Trevor Lawrence, what he displayed last night on the biggest of stages against a bunch of Sunday guys. A bunch of Sunday guys, as we always know Alabama has on the defensive side. He's already special. This kid is already special. So as long as the game continues to move in that direction, there's no major setbacks, no injuries, or there's no complacency. He might be one of, I mean, he has the opportunity to be one of the better quarterbacks we've seen really since Andrew Luck, in my opinion.
All right, 402-573-0590 is the number to call if you want to join the program today. Got headlines next. Greg Smith, HailVarsity.com with the Huskers recruiting update down at the bottom of the hour here on AM 590.
ESPN Omaha.
This is Omaha Sports Insider, online and on air. On air. OSI, your sports source, powered by KMTV and AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
Got to get to headlines here in just a moment. 402-573-0590 if you want to weigh in at any point throughout the day. This is also, of course, your opportunity to talk and, you know, pay tribute to college football as we say goodbye until August. Joe in Crete wants to weigh in. What's up, Joe?
The thing that's most interesting is there was a recent article I saw on the sports page of the All-American freshman class.
Yep.
And for the first time, there'd be two quarterbacks put together, and it was the Alabama quarterback and Martinez, which I find very interesting.
Yeah, and yeah,
Clemson quarterback.
Yeah,
Tyler Lawrence, or Trevor Lawrence, excuse me.
All right. Appreciate that, Joe. Yeah, the Football Writers Association of America had, I don't know if it's, is that the first time it's ever happened? But I
got to be honest, I don't really pay attention that if they typically have two quarterbacks, but we discussed this yesterday, and you know what, we're going to talk to Brian Fisher later. I know he is a voter with the Football Writers Association of America, and I'm curious on the idea of Adrian Martinez, because when you see Adrian Martinez and Trevor Lawrence both named on that, and I have no problem saying that Adrian Martinez was definitely one of the top performing freshmen, true freshmen in college football. You got to see who he shared the honor with on the biggest stage last night, which was very exciting. But hey, we all saw it before our eyes. If there are any issues with Nebraska going forward, it's not at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
It isn't. And Adrian Martinez, that's what I thought was so great is, you got Trevor Lawrence and Adrian Martinez, and you're watching what Trevor Lawrence can do. Boy, it's amazing when you have the skill around a guy like that. And I mean, let's also give plenty of credits to another true freshman in Justin Ross. The catches that he made and the plays that he made were just absolutely special, like big time Sunday type special. He started to dominate, like going back to the days of Megatron, where you just could not go, you couldn't cover the guy. And if you did, guess what? He was probably still going to pick the ball over your head or something. That was fun to watch, too. Watching Adrian Martinez throughout this season, you can definitely tell how special of a talent he is. Trevor Lawrence maybe showed a little bit more of that last night because of the type of situation he was in. But to say that Adrian Martinez is a guy that couldn't ascend, and that's the key right there. Don't descend. You have to ascend, develop, and continue to move forward. I still think that he could potentially be a first rounder when all is said and done.
It's headline time. What you got for us, TJ?
All right. Well, apparently, guys, per sources, Cliff Kingsbury is saying goodbye to USC and saying hello to being the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, and we talked about this yesterday.
Round 10.
Ooh. He's a sub-500 head coach in college football. Nick, this to me, when you look at the two most recent hires in the NFL, Cliff Kingsbury to Arizona, rumored, and then Matt LaFleur to the Green Bay Packers, everybody is trying to find the next Sean McVay right now. It's just the trendy thing where it's like, remember the whole conversation about McVay? It's like, it might just be a year too early for this guy. It might be a year too early, but he's young. He's got his innovative ideas, and Kingsbury very much fits that mold. He's kind of in that Lincoln Riley. I mean, all of these guys are like Mike Leach disciples. It's an air raid thing, right? Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Yeah.
He's going to fit. Nick, I think he fits in better in Arizona than he does with the New York Jets. I mean, just.
Oh, yeah. Well,
he can wear his Ray-Bans during the game. They play inside. It's always bright in a dome,
get
right?
Get your tan on. And you know what? When it's when the weather's okay, it's not too hot, you know, they can open that thing. It's got the retractable roof, so he can still catch some rays. In all seriousness, yeah. I said it yesterday. For USC, I understood why they were trying to keep him from interviewing, because they're trying to solidify their offense and their recruiting class around a proven offensive mind. And this is a big setback for USC. You know, it really is.
Yes.
And with the hiring of Matt LaFleur for Green Bay, I did find it funny that Josh McDaniels, who didn't get that job, who did interview for Green Bay, didn't get it. I don't know if they actually offered and he turned it down. I think they went with Matt LaFleur. I don't think Josh wants to go through any more rejection.
Nah,
so he's like, I'm going to stay in New England.
He's finished. I'm going to spend just another second here on Kingsbury. So maybe we'll get to the rest of the headlines, because I know I got to get to Greg. Well, I promise we will get back to all the headlines here, TJ. But I just, look, the USC thing too, Nick, that cannot be understated, because that program is a disaster right now. I mean, no offense to Clay Helton. They said, you know, they being Lynn Swann and everybody else involved in the administration, there's like, we didn't force Clay Helton to make any changes. Maybe they didn't, but Clay Helton knew that the writing was on the wall. He fired, like, everybody out there, okay? And Cliff Kingsbury was supposed to be his golden boy offensive hire that was going to revolutionize that offense, really bring them to the next level, and now all of a sudden he's gone after, what, like, a week on the job? That's a tough one, especially at this time of year, Nick, where a lot of the top guys have kind of already decided, you know, where they're going to be, where they're going to go.
I'm not a fan of that, knowing that, that's what's tough for USC, is I'm sure a lot of conversation was, you know, we want you here. Are you looking at other places? I mean, they committed to him. And is it at the level of the Josh McDaniels? No, because I'm sure he had every intention of staying true to his word and his obligation as the offensive coordinator. And anytime something bigger comes along, which would be a head coaching job at the next level, boy, it's tough to turn that down. But in a way, yeah, I feel for USC, because they thought they had their guy, and this was a great addition to what they are trying to do and what is a very important season. So I can't fault Cliff Kingsbury. I'll go on the record right now and say this. I don't think it'll work. I just don't think it'll work.
Well, and, you know, Nick, I might have said the same thing about Sean McVay. I might have said the same thing about some of these other guys that have had a lot of success. You know, it's kind of funny, because Kyle Shanahan was like the one guy who everybody thought, like, you know, working with Kubiak, kind of coming from that system, and then, you know, having the success that he did in Atlanta, everybody thought, man, you know, Shanahan's a young guy, but this is going to work. Now, he's been dealt a really bad hand in terms of injuries, especially at the quarterback position, first 2 years in San Francisco.
You saw that team going in the right direction at the end of last season. Going into this year with Jimmy Garoppolo having a full season under his belt, I would have been very curious to see how that would have worked out. Unfortunately, it didn't, because of the injury to Garoppolo. But yeah, I still have a lot of confidence in Shanahan. I can't get over the fact that Cliff Kingsbury wasn't very good
at
Texas Tech.
And maybe the change in scenery, change of personality, who knows, Nick? I mean, the Arizona Cardinals are quite frankly kind of a mess anyway. I mean, they're building from nothing. Plus, he's going to have the number one overall pick this next year. So it's not like he's falling into a terrible situation. They don't need to address the quarterback spot. I mean, do you feel like Cliff Kingsbury, the kind of a guy who can relate to Josh Rosen at least?
I don't know.
Did anybody relate to Josh Rosen?
It's the million-dollar question. I really don't know.
Look, he knows how to run an air raid system and put points on the board. There is no question. Texas Tech scored their fair share of points the last few years under Cliff Kingsbury. The problem is that they couldn't stop anybody. So priority number one, if you're Arizona, who has not had a terrible defense, you know, going into the last couple of seasons, find a veteran defensive coordinator you can pair with him, like a Vic Fangio type. I mean, not necessarily Vic Fangio, because I think he's going to be the head coach of the Denver Broncos, but still, somebody like that that's been around the league a long time, they can make sure that you're serviceable on that side of the ball. Because right now, man, it feels like everybody that's hiring a coach is going offense, 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 offense. Find a good defensive coordinator to make sure you stabilize that side of the ball in Arizona. Maybe you got a shot. I don't know. That is, if you believe Josh Rosen can be a decent NFL quarterback, can focus enough to be an NFL quarterback, which this year, jury's still out in my opinion.
I really am fascinated to see this thing play out, because even when he was rumored to be up for NFL jobs, I kind of scratch my head. Now, just because you're not successful in college doesn't mean you can't be in the NFL and vice versa. So maybe there is something to that. My gut tells me this might fail. This is Arizona throwing something at the wall that they think, okay, this is the current trend. All right, maybe there's not that NFL guy that exists right now. So now we got to look at the college rankings. Lincoln Riley said no. So maybe Cliff Kingsbury's that guy. Either way, USC, that's a tough spot for them.
Yes, it is.
So you guys say it could fail. It could. But I could also see what happened in L.A. with the Rams. A year ago, it was Jeff Fisher and Jared Goff, and they looked like a horrible match. But sure. All of a sudden, you bring in Sean McVay, and Jared Goff is almost an MVP. So now all of a sudden, Jeff Rosen this past year didn't look great at all. But now you bring in offensive mind like Cliff Kingsbury. I think that could maybe change Rosen's outlook.
Now, pardon my ignorance here, because I cared so little about the Arizona Cardinals this year. They fired Bruce Arians last season. Who the hell was the head coach down there this year?
God, what's his name?
I can't think of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of the problem. Is I mean, they were so irrelevant from like week one of the regular season. I don't even remember who their old coach was.
Wilkes?
He was just a one and done.
Yeah.
I mean.
He's kind of like the San Francisco guy. What was that dude's name? Jim Tom Sula?
Oh, yeah, Jim Tom Sula. Looked like one of the funniest things Dan Le Batard ever compared to said that he would be that guy. Wait, I think it was Lane Kiffin would be the dude on his speedboat that would go by in the no wake zone where Jim Tom Sula is fishing with his Snoopy pole and knock his boat over. That was like one of the funniest things ever.
That's a good one. All right, coming up next, Greg Smith joins us, HailVarsity.com, getting a Nebraska football recruiting update as we are closing in on the second official signing period here on AM 590.
ESPN. I'll fully admit, I'm not sure if Greg Smith of HailVarsity.com is a man that will use profanity, but Greg, the double doink, I didn't even have a profanity, because this is the sad thing. I saw, not the double doink, but I just assumed that the field goal was going to be missed, and that's how the Bears would go down once it came down to Cody Parkey. But you know, did the entire city of Lincoln hear your reaction, or were you as subdued as I was?
I was in the middle, because when it happened, I just yelled, "Oh no!" and it fell out on the floor. Like, I did not. There were no profanities. I just fell out. My dog went running.
You were PG about it?
Yeah, I was okay. PG about it, but I definitely had a moment. Yeah.
I watched a video of some guy just destroy the door.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the Barstool one where they show the guy leaving the stadium just completely flipping out.
That guy was flipping out too. Yeah, it was just F Cody was the caption, wasn't it? I mean, if you are that intense and that wrapped up in this kind of stuff, like, what are you doing with your life? Like, where do these people come from? Like, seriously, Greg, are there Nebraska football fans like that I am just blissfully like unaware of existing?
Probably, actually. but I don't understand, like, the door video, and I saw that yesterday. I had not seen that one until last night, actually. And that was nuts. Like, I can't imagine getting to that point where I just want to destroy a door. But no, there's definitely Nebraska fans out there. Love you guys. Love the passion. Nebraska fans like that.
Hashtag nothing but love.
I think once he missed it, I kind of sat there with my hands on my head thinking, you got to be kidding me. And then I took my dog out. I took my dog outside so my dog could go take care of her business. And I came back just kind of like, meh, okay.
Guess there's always next year.
This is my life right now. But
Gilmore, you mentioned your name, didn't we?
Speaking of which, one of the best, and I don't know where you are on this, Greg, and we are going to talk Husker recruiting here in just a moment. I don't feel like sorry for Cody Parkey, but I do hope he avoids like the craziness that comes with like death threats. And of course, we were just talking about that F Cody Parkey video and stuff like that's just absurd. But I have to say I was laughing. There was one that the Shooter McGavin Twitter account said, if you listen closely, you could tell why Cody Parkey missed. And as he is getting ready to kick it, they go ahead and insert jackass. That is the funniest one I have heard yet. It is great. It is. I mean, everybody's being creative with us. That one was so like too like perfect for it. So I do appreciate that one.
Yeah, we can go with the funny creative ones. We can definitely do. I'm totally with you. Like, we don't need to go to death threats and all of that. Like, but at the same time, like, I mean, he should be cut. That's your job. Pick those. But, like, you know, we don't need to go all the way there. We just need him to lose his job.
I'm surprised we haven't seen the Lance Stephenson, like, blowing the ball to the left yet. Maybe that's coming. That might be next.
I'm sure there's a crying Jordan one on the way, too.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, I know that the next event that a lot of Husker fans are watching for, the Polynesian Bowl coming up here in a couple weeks, with Noah Pola-Gates expected to make his announcement at that point. I feel like every time we have you on or a recruiting analyst on, I kind of always ask, what are you getting temperature-wise right now from him, the outstanding four-star cornerback?
You know, it's interesting because from him, the last time I talked to him was getting confusion just on the, hey, it's going to be a tough decision. So just from him personally, it's been tough to read. But when you talk to kind of sources and people around his recruitment, you feel like this is definitely trending Nebraska's way. I know that the guys that were down, the three Husker commits or signees that were down at the All-American Bowl with him were working on it very hard. He in fact, roomed with Ty Robinson. They were roommates during that event, so that's always a good thing to have happen for you. I think that the chances are very good that he ends up at Nebraska. It's just always, you know, Nebraska fans are a little snake bit about these public declarations, especially at these All-Star events, because they've been snake bitten on those. But I think Nebraska should feel really good about that one right now.
Well, look at the defensive side of the football, and I know Dylan Jordan is supposed to be in Lincoln. Anything, making you nervous about that potential prospect and where Nebraska lands?
Yeah, the one thing that would make me nervous there is that he tweeted out that he changed his top five and rearranged his business schedule a little bit. Looks like Auburn got included in that top five, replacing Kansas. So anytime you have a team like Auburn replacing a team like Kansas, that makes you a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
So the concern there would just be that he's getting a lot of new interest. And this was bound to happen, though, right? This is what we've talked about all season long, about the guys that wait and don't sign in December. If you have some potential, you're definitely going to be a guy that kind of blows up and gets a lot of new interest. But I think Nebraska sits in a good position with him here. He's got some Husker fans that are around him. I believe his coach or his uncle, one of the two, they all kind of blend together, have Husker ties or really like the Huskers. I think he'll still definitely get a visit from him on the 25th. And it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up in the class. But whenever you have that new interest, that always is a little bit of concern.
Greg, give us the latest on Dedrick Mills, too, and where he stands, the JUCO player out of Kansas.
Yeah, Mills is in a really interesting situation, is that, you know, the hope was that he would be able to sign in December and then he'd be on campus now, starting classes and winter conditioning, which started yesterday. There's still a little bit of a holdup on that. There's still actually a chance that he could sign before January 15th. Which is the last date that you could sign as a JUCO player, because their signing period is a little different than your traditional high school one. But I feel good that he'll end up in Lincoln. It's just a matter of when. He told me that he's still planning on signing with Nebraska. He's still committed to Nebraska. He's not really entertaining other schools at this point. So I think he ends up in Lincoln. It's just a matter of whether or not he can get here sooner rather than the summer. But I think at this point I'd say he ends up here in the summer, but he still ends up with Nebraska.
You know, Greg, as a follow-up on him, am I wrong to maybe question some of the circumstances surrounding the delay here? I mean, he had the disciplinary issue at Georgia Tech, resurfaces in Kansas, and then the reason I guess he didn't sign, or one of the reasons, because he was making a court appearance where he got arrested because he didn't pay a speeding ticket or something like that. I mean, is there maybe a couple of yellowish red flags going up with this guy already here because of this stuff, or am I just reading too much into it?
No, I mean, I don't think you're reading too much into it, because I think that you never want to see your potential players coming into the program in any sort of trouble with the law. But to be honest, I don't think that any of that has anything to do with what's going on. I think this is strictly he didn't have the credits necessary to get into Nebraska right away, or enough classes didn't transfer over when he's trying to come over from JUCO. And I know he's taking a winter class or two right now and trying to finish that up. But I think it had much more to do with that and the academics than it did, driving with a suspended license and speeding. I don't think it had much to do with that.
Talking with Greg Smith, HailVarsity.com. Greg, the way too early top 25 came out for ESPN this morning. Nebraska ranked number 24. In your opinion, how much of that has to do with Adrian Martinez? And maybe the other element to that is how much of that has to do with the belief in what Scott Frost is able to recruit and his staff be able to develop?
Yeah, I think 60% Scott Frost in his recent history, 40% Adrian Martinez. Mm-hmm. Because I think that people, like, I feel like people nationally are aware of Adrian Martinez, but as you continue to see him, you know, pick up more freshman awards, he was on that FWAA All-American, mm-hmm. freshman All-American team with Trevor Lawrence yesterday. So you're like, okay, Nebraska's got something going at quarterback. And then you think, oh, wait, well, they also have the guy that was the hot coach last year. Who did struggle this past season, but you know that they could turn things around because they did at UCF as well. So, yeah, I think it's a combination of those two, because if people know your quarterback and they know your head coach, that'll get you some votes. But it also, you know, the way that Nebraska finished the season also really helps them out as well. So that gives them a little bit of something to back up these early claims. And I thought that this was going to happen, that Nebraska would end up being in a lot of these two early top 25s. I expect them to be in that others receiving votes when it actually comes out at the beginning of next season, then it wouldn't surprise me if after a couple of weeks they sneak back into the top 25.
Greg, you cover this as well as anybody when it comes to the current climate of recruiting, and there was a moment after the national championship game last night where Dabo Swinney's doing his on-field interview, his post-game interview, and everything that he had to say, I'm taken back and I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, if you are a recruit that is considering Clemson, how could you not go there? I mean, just with what he had to say and just talking about the environment and just his overall passion for these kids, just from what you know experience-wise and talking to these guys on a daily basis, how much of that resonates with them?
Oh, it resonates a lot. And it's different. So it's different when Clemson and Dabo Swinney gets up there and talks versus, say, Alabama had won, or when they won last year and Nick Saban talks. Like, the vibe is just completely different. It's a family feel at Clemson versus more of a business-like NFL approach with Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. So you just feel like, it just feels like something you can wrap your arms around a little bit more and get a little bit more excited about, right? If you're thinking about going to Clemson in that situation, not saying by any stretch that Alabama's losing guys, but it's just a different feeling with Clemson. So yeah, you can't help but to see that and be impressed. And I think that's why you see a few more coaches around the country start to try to run their programs a little bit more like Dabo Swinney and a little less like Nick Saban. And actually, Scott Frost and Nebraska are one of them. If you had to categorize which way that Scott Frost was closer to, it's definitely Dabo Swinney. He's not as, you know, kind of touchy-feely, lovey-dovey outwardly, right, like that, mm-hmm. as far as Dabo. Because we know he can be a little prickly at those press conferences and things, but he's definitely a lot closer to that. You saw it in the end of his time at UCF.
Greg Smith, HaleVarsity.com. Very latest on recruiting, especially now that time between today and the final national signing day. Be sure to stay up to date. He's on Twitter at GregSmithHV. Greg, there's next year, man, for the Bears.
Bear down, boys, bear down.
Next year, man. And you know what was great? Robbie Gould is a free agent, and he was actually at the game. I'm sure he was feeling the love. So maybe we'll be as good as Gould again next year.
I hope so. But he can come on home anytime to give us a confident kicker. Bear down.
All right. Talk to you next time, Greg. Have a good one.
You too.
The way too early top 25, Nick, I have your answer for you. Probably 50% Scott Frost, 40% Adrian Martinez, 10% the people that put those things together didn't watch Nebraska play defense this year. How does that sound?
Yeah. I mean, there could be part of that. I think when you have a transcendent quarterback and he's young and you understand what a team's identity is going to be, I understand the praise for that, and I get it. I'm not ready to put him in the top 25 yet. The schedule definitely gets easier. I understand that too. But yeah, I mean, there are some challenges on that other side of the football that Nebraska doesn't have to be perfect, but they've got to improve. And until we know that they can improve, you know, I get it. I do get it. I absolutely. And Scott Frost, this is the great thing, Nebraska fans. It's a great thing about what Scott Frost is representing. People have confidence in him. From the national point of view, they have confidence in him. And when you do have a tremendous quarterback, a tremendous young talent like that, people are going to really talk about you, and they're going to definitely point their arrows at you. So, you know, we'll see. But I mean, it's at the very least, it's a vote of confidence for what Scott Frost can do at Nebraska.
I'm still waiting, and I didn't even bring it up with Greg this week, Nick, because it's the perpetual question that is not going to be answered this offseason. Who are they going to recruit to rush the passer next year? Mm-hmm. And all these guys we're talking about, you know, Noah Pola-Gates, some other defensive backs, you know, they're looking at even some wide receivers, maybe even more running backs, which they're going to be good on offense. I mean, I think anybody that watched Nebraska this year knows that even going into next season, they're going to be, I think they're going to be way better on offense than what they were even this season. I still don't know what they are doing defensively that's going to make them markedly better next season than what they were this season. And that's where, if anything's going to hold them back next year, it's going to be on that side of the football, right?
I would agree.
And yeah. You start off the season in the top 25, maybe top 25. I just want to talk a little bit about some of the futures odds that came out for winning the national title next year when Nebraska fits in, coming up top of next hour. But if there's something that's going to hold them back, that's going to be it. I fully expect Nebraska's offense to be even better than what it was this year. But we'll get into that coming
up.
Well.
Can I be that guy who says,
oh, please be. Yes.
I want to be that guy that says, well, in special teams has to improve.
Well,
it's true.
Admittedly,
it's true.
Special
it's
teams
just not sexy to talk about.
You know, special teams got better as the year went along, Nick, because middle part of the season, I'm not sure they could possibly have been any worse.
No.
I mean, really, there wasn't a whole lot of basement left underneath them.
Poor Caleb Lightbourne.
I wonder what that, I mean, is, do we know what his future is looking? I mean, is he done? Is he coming back? Is he going to be the holder next year? Do you think the Zach Darlington route? Or what's the story?
I don't know, but by the way, now we all knew Andrew Bunch was sort of, you know, he put his name in the transfer market. He's enrolled in spring classes, and apparently, according to Sam McCune, has attended workouts. So maybe Andrew Bunch is back. Not that that's, like, huge for Nebraska, but...
It's good for him. He's never going to play, but, you know,
I mean, I
awesome.
Think he could go somewhere else at, you know, maybe
sure.
a FCS level
or FCS
and be a
school,
starter or something.
D2, but whatever, be a starter. But, Nick, I mean, yeah. Come on. But with Noah Vedral eligible now, mm-hmm. Luke McCaffrey coming in, Andrew Bunch is way down the pecking order at this point, I would assume.
Think.
So, but then again, we've also seen... Zach Darlington get his opportunity.
But for kids to stick it out, I'm always, always happy to see kids stick it out, too.
It's AM 590.
ESPN.
This is Omaha Sports Insider. Online and on air. On air. OSI, your sports source. Powered by KMTV and AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
Okay, so I just saw this, little Nick, but I've been wanting to bring this up for like a week. So... I don't watch much Lifetime television, admittedly.
Oh, you should.
Dude, I'm a 34-year-old man. I know, I just had a kid and everything, but I don't watch a lot of Lifetime. However,
there's some really bad movies.
No, but I mean, however, it popped up on my Hulu like feed the other day because they have this new docuseries out called Surviving R.
Yeah,
Kelly.
Yeah, R. Kelly, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I read a story probably 2 years ago about, it was these two parents whose like 14-year-old daughter was living with him, and they were convinced that he had brainwashed her and that she was a sex slave for him and everything.
Yep.
And it was like this mom who was just pleading with her to like to come home, but like R. Kelly had her like brainwashed somehow. And I just saw this news story from, get this, TMZ, that apparently he is now under criminal investigation in Georgia because... in part of some of the things that were revealed in this docuseries that were previously, like, unknown, unreported. And it's, from what I've read about this, this is, like, a super, super creepy deal. Like,
it is a lot, there are a lot more layers than I think any of us had originally anticipated or even knew about when this whole thing was becoming a story. I was watching, like, Good Morning America, and they were sort of doing a wrap-up of everything that they took away from that and how it's now all of a sudden getting, you know, other people involved and kind of speaking out with other allegations. And so, you know, from the Time's Up and the Me Too movement, all of a sudden there's like an R. Kelly movement. And, oh, boy, the power of social media. And when all of a sudden that's, you know, those types of stories surface, yeah, I'm sure sometimes, you know, people will try to take advantage of the momentum of something like that and claim that they're a victim. But boy, there's also a lot of victims that have probably been keeping their mouth shut or were just, you know, didn't feel like it was their place to say anything because they were scared or for whatever reason. Then all of a sudden you feel some safety in numbers. I mean, this guy, at least what is being reported, oh my gosh! I thought he was a creepy dude to begin
with.
Now it's just like, oh my goodness.
Because there was the thing, what, about 10 years ago, where there was this report
he
was
urinated on the girl.
Yeah, he was relieving himself on people, which is creepy enough as it is. But yeah, there was this apparently, I guess, a lady, Asante McGee. I don't know if she's in the entertainment business or whatever. If she was just one of the alleged victims here, but she like escaped his house as a sex slave. And again, I read this report. It had to be about a year ago at this time of this mother whose daughter had been supposedly brainwashed by him. I actually went through my phone at the time. I had two or three R. Kelly songs on there, and I was like, you know what? I just can't do this anymore. Like, I cannot listen to this guy or support him in anything that he is doing. And I've not seen any of the docuseries yet because, again, I don't watch a lot of Lifetime television. Although, being as it is, it's either on Amazon Prime or Hulu, one of the two, you can watch it. I'm going to have to go and check out some of this now because I know there were a couple of celebrities who were involved in this. Like, I know John Legend is a part of the docuseries. And you got to kind of wonder, like, the music industry is fairly, like, you know, close-knit. It's like, how many people kind of knew what was going on or knew this dude is a total creep before this? But very interesting stuff.
Fred had the tweet at us, too, by the way. For anybody who hasn't seen the Dave Chappelle skit of R. Kelly and the remix edition where he puts his own little spin on it, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. So thank you, Fremont Fred, for reminding us about the Dave Chappelle, R. Kelly skit, because it is very, very funny.
It is funny. Dave Chappelle did a lot of funny skits with a lot of very, very sketchy people involved.
The R. Kelly's top five. The R. Kelly's definitely top five.
I would agree. All right, coming up next hour of the show, going to talk to Tony Boone of the Omaha World Herald, our weekly Omaha Mavericks report. Lead things off, though, the future odds are out as to who is most likely to be the 2020 winner of the college football playoff. It will not surprise you who is number one, but where Nebraska is pegged might. We'll get to that next on AM 590.
ESPN Omaha.